Blog Talk Radio.
Together with Russia, for example, in Libya, we should be opening up the passes to be able to go through and provide food assistance and vital assistance to a population that's in real trouble. I think I'm going to try very much hard to. And by the way, there's places where. I shouldn't be starting off and negotiating in public here, but let me say it this way. Russia has engaged in activities which we believe are contrary to international norms, but they have also bitten off some real problems they're going to have trouble chewing on. And for example, the rebuilding of Syria, of Libya, they're there.
Joe Biden, this is the G7.
I'm sorry, I'm going to get in trouble with staff if I don't do this the right way. Jennifer Jacob Bloomberg.
COVID,
I know you all know, but a lot of people may not know what COVID is. That is a system whereby they're going to provide funding for states to be able to get access to vaccine.
That's not what's going on. Anyway.
Mr. President.
Yeah, I'm not compensated. Hey, what the hell, what do you do over there?
So,
when did I say I was compensated?
You said in the next 6 months.
I said, let's get it straight. I said, what will change their behavior is if the rest of the world reacts to them and it diminishes their standing in the world. I'm not confident of anything. I'm just stating the fact.
But given his past behavior has not changed, and in that press conference, after sitting down with you for several hours, he denied any involvement in cyber attacks. He downplayed human rights abuses. He even refused to say Alexei Navalny's name. So how does that account to a constructive meeting as President Putin?
You don't understand that. You're in the wrong place.
Is there something with China?
Come on, quickly, let's go.
The one who doesn't understand it. What a cop-out. If you don't understand that, you're in the wrong business. He's probably not even, he probably can't even remember that he met with Vladimir Putin. Hey, everybody. James Bostic, Conservative's Perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio Network. I'm a little sad, and I'm not exactly sure if I'm going to be able to get through this. I'm going to try. My smoker blew up, man, and I don't know what I'm going to do. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not really – well, I am kind of broken up about it. But, yeah, I got two massive racks of ribs out there, and I kept waiting on the smoker to preheat, and it's not preheating. And I'm bummed out about this because now – I'm on the hook for a new smoker. Anyway, it's good to be here regardless of that. That was some bad news, and I am a little, a tad distraught over that. We heard Joe Biden, as I said, the great intellectual colossus striding across the world stage. They're in London for the G7. First day there. He gets lost. You can find the video over at Jewish Voice if they haven't pulled it yet, because they've been really good at trying to keep a lid on Joe Biden's cognitive struggles and his subsequent decline. There were two components, two sections of this particular cafe restaurant where they were supposed to be meeting, and he was going to be meeting, I think, with Boris Johnson and some of the UK people. Well, he winds up in the wrong part of the cafeteria, the wrong part of the restaurant. And he's just walking around. He's just wandering around, talking to people aimlessly. And someone starts asking him some questions about foreign policy and what his hopes are for the G7. And he's about ready to engage them. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, thank God, I'm sure his handlers were saying, Jill Biden comes up, takes JoJo by the hand, and leads him quickly out of that area. So I appreciate your sympathy, Gary. Gary Benford there, my main man from United Patriots Uprising. My great friend just sent me some condolences on the passing of my smoker. He's been with me a long time, Gary. Me and that smoker went through a lot of butts, man. We ran through them together. Yeah, slapped them around, rubbed them up, sweated them. I mean, the whole deal. We were there. We were in it together. And I'm going to – it's sad. Maybe it can be fixed. I might be able to just order the right part and maybe repair it. Anyway, back to Joe Biden. So those of us who are intellectually honest understand very clearly that there is a cognitive decline in this guy, that he's struggling, man. He's struggling. And they can give him – all the nootropic enhancers that they want, and I'm sure they've got some kind of cocktail that probably changes weekly based on his cognitive responses and trying to preserve, to keep him as cognitively intact as they can. I just don't know how much longer it's going to last. He meets with Boris Yeltsin. Haven't heard that name in a while. I was thinking of Boris Johnson. He meets with Vladimir Putin. And he hands Putin a list of infrastructure targets that would be highly susceptible to hacking. Now, let me say that again. No, I'm not making this up. Joe Biden hands Vladimir Putin a list of 16 areas of infrastructure and national security priorities, you know, just sensitive stuff. A list of cyber hacking targets that he better not cyber hack. Hands him a list. Son of a... Seriously? Really? So he gets lost at the cafeteria, and Jill's got to reel him in. He yells at this reporter, and the reason he was yelling at this reporter and getting on her is because she was not on the approved list. Okay, and that's what he's got. He's got a pre-approved list. Looking at the reporters to call on during his press conference after his meeting with President Putin, he says, I'll take your questions, and as usual, folks, they gave me a list of people I'm going to call on. Pre-approved. Now, what do pre-approved reporters do? Well, they're going to ask pre-approved questions. And what kind of questions are going to be pre-approved? Mr. President, did they have bear claws at the Continental Breakfast this morning? That's what he's going to get. Mr. President, how do your shoes feel? Are you happy with the way they feel? Do you feel assertive in those shoes? I mean, that's the kind of crap that's going to happen. And why are pre-approved reporters asking pre-approved questions? I don't know. But I bet you do. Actually, I think we all do. But we're not going to find that, well, besides guys like me, but you're not going to find that in the establishment media. You're not going to hear this. Not here in the United States. However, a lot of times to see what the world thinks about the United States and our political skullduggery and going comings and goings as they are, we have to leave the country. And I have a segment here from a guy named Chris Kenny. I think it's Australia. It's either Australia or New Zealand. He's with Sky News. Sky News, of course, is the Europe version, the United Kingdom version, rather, of Fox News. It's a Murdoch corporation. This was from, I think, yesterday, following up on the meeting, you know, the G7 summit, and then, of course, the one-on-one meeting with Putin. Here's what responsible journalists elsewhere in the world think about our president.
Well, I want to start with something that Chris Smith touched on this program last night. The Joe Biden gaffes, the stumbles, the confusion, they just continue and they get worse. Seriously, his staff probably can't wait to get him home to bed in the White House. But before he does that, the president has to go face to face with Russian President Vladimir Putin, which is a big worry given what I'm about to show you. And believe me, most of the media just doesn't show you this stuff. Now, some of these clips are a bit long, but I want you to get a proper sense of what's going on here, a proper sense of how the U.S. president is handling it. First up, top of the agenda between Joe Biden and Vladimir Putin ought to be Syria. But in the lead-up, the U.S. president seems to confuse that country with Libya.
We could work together with Russia, for example, in Libya. We should be opening up the passes to be able to go through and provide food assistance and vital assistance to a population that's in real trouble. I think I'm going to try very much hard to, and by the way, there's places where I shouldn't be starting off and negotiating in public here, but let me say it this way.
You shouldn't be in the White House or anywhere in public in front of a camera,
Russia,
you doddering old fool.
Has engaged in activities which are, we believe are contrary to international norms, but they have also bitten off some real problems they're going to have trouble chewing on. And, for example, the rebuilding of Syria, of Libya, of, you know, this is, they're there. And as long as they're there without the ability to bring about some order in the region, and you can't do that very well without providing for the basic economic needs of people. So I'm hopeful that we can find an accommodation that where we can save the lives of people in, for example, in Libya.
What the
Libya?
Is he talking about?
Or Syria? Does he know?
Well, wow. He doesn't know.
Putin must be trembling in his boots, hey, on the eve of this summit.
Laughing his arse off.
We seem to have gone from Russian collusion to Russian delusion. Because just have a listen to how Joe Biden responds to this question about his, about how exactly how he's described Vladimir Putin in the past.
In a weekend interview, Vladimir Putin laughed at the suggestion that you had called him a killer. Is that still your belief, sir, that he is a killer? And I'll continue the trend if you don't mind of asking a second question. Do you believe if he does agree to cooperate, then what kind of a challenge do you find yourself in? How would you ever trust him? And if Ronald Reagan said trust but verify, what do you say to Vladimir Putin?
To answer the first question, I'm laughing too. They actually, well, look, I mean, he has made clear that the answer is, I believe he has in the past essentially acknowledged that he was, there are certain things that he would do or did do. But look, when I was asked that question on air, I answered it honestly. But it's not much of a, I don't think it matters a whole lot in terms of this next meeting we're about to have.
Oh, my God.
Whew.
Democrats,
just draw all that together. I guess he's saying, yeah, he is a killer.
DDS,
but that doesn't matter now. See, it's more than awkward, isn't it? Biden's going to be representing the interests of the free world when he confronts the belligerent Russian president in their Geneva summit tomorrow. And it's hardly shaping up as Rocky Balboa versus Ivan Drago, is it? I said before the election that the Biden campaign had all the hallmarks of a Weekend at Bernie's effort. Now he leads the free world. Biden has the opposite problem to Donald Trump. Trump refused to stay on script and was too blunt for many people, especially in diplomacy. Biden can only work by reading a script. Once he wanders off on his own, no one knows where he's going to end up. It's a worry for the US, for you and me, but not for Putin.
Nah, no worries for Putin. And it's I just wonder what is going to give first, the country or the Biden administration. I came across an article earlier, let's see if I can find it, about just this issue, about just how many days or how much longer within this power vacuum, and that's what it is. It's becoming a power vacuum because as it continues, the Biden administration is going to lose more and more power. And it's not going to take very long. It's not going to take long at all. There's a guy by the name of James Howard Kunstler. He's a writer. He's a thinker. He's ahead. And he did an article on just this a couple days ago. And let me see if I can find that sucker. Yes, the three-way squeeze. I don't know just how well anchored this whole supposition is, but it does merit consideration. The Biden regime, according to James Kunstler, has only a few months to live because it is caught. It is caught in a squeeze between some of the greatest lies in world history, and they are all unraveling now. Anyway, Joe Biden is not really functioning as president of the United States. He's just this doddering old photo op front man for a kind of Politburo centered around Barack Obama, and that group lives in perpetual terror of being found out, which it will be, despite its capture of the traditional news and social media. The first lie. The big lie number one is actually a whole bundle of lies, and they have to do with the COVID-19 pandemic. The chief national health official, Dr. Anthony Fauci, also known as the science, can't seem to get his story straight about whether or not he funneled U.S. taxpayer money to a lab that was associated with the China People's Liberation Army, the Communist Chinese Army, to engineer a virus that was turned loose on the rest of the world. An email train of evidence shows that he did know. That was bad enough. Then Dr. Fauci and most of the nation's medical bureaucracy worked hard to suppress cheap and effective treatments that defeated the virus and cured the patients if used in the early stages of infection, namely ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D, fluoxetine, Prozac. Used off-label, it helps to modulate brain inflammation. The suppression of these treatment modalities continues to this day. Dr. Fauci and company promoted the use of a PCR viral testing system run at excessive cycle thresholds. And what that did is it flooded the medical system with unending false positives. The test's inventor, the late Dr. Kerry Mulis, had said the test was never meant to be used as a diagnostic tool. But that's what they used it as, and they used it that way because they knew they could successfully inflate infection numbers. Dr. Fauci and the medical bureaucracy are promoting an experimental gene therapy as a vaccine, or so says the man who invented the mRNA vaccine procedure, Dr. Robert Malone. Plus, you can hear him say that in this three-hour roundtable discussion that you can find on Brett Weinstein's Dark Horse YouTube podcast, if they haven't taken it down. If you listen to that, you'll learn that the three vaccines being used are part of that. You'll also hear Dr. Malone describe the spike protein, which is the chief mechanism activated by the vaccines, as a toxic agent. Now, this can't be good news for the millions. Now, what are they talking about when they say mRNA? How was it put? Gene therapy, mRNA. Okay, so what are they doing? They are altering your DNA. They're not injecting you with a diluted, so to speak, strain of the virus so that you can build up antibodies without getting really, really sick. No. They're changing your DNA. Well, this is RNA. So, have you guys had the vaccine yet? Well, all three of these vaccines, no matter which one you're using, are all based on the mRNA procedure, vaccine procedure, ribonucleic acid. We don't really know. Again, this is all experimental. We don't know what the long-term effects of this will be. But it is apparently the case that the toxic spike protein does not behave in the way that it was supposed to. That is, it does not remain in the intramuscular vaccination site, but rather it migrates all through the body with a special affinity for causing cardiovascular mischief, neuromuscular disorders, damage to reproductive organs. We don't know. We don't know how this is going to work out. And beware of fresh attempts by your government to coerce you into a vaccination or series of them. Now, this is a fast-developing story, and I saw according to the CDC, I'm going to have to try and find this. And I don't know if I can, but I'm going to try. There has been a tremendous spike in vaccine deaths. And not amongst the people you would think. Let's see if I can find it. Okay, yeah. Now, this is CDC. And it's called the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. And what that is whenever there's a vaccine or new medication comes out, or a medication comes out and there's a series of adverse events or adverse reactions, people get sick, people die. According to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which is, like I said, organized within the CDC, there were 5,997 currently reported fatalities in 2021 attributed to vaccinations during the first half of the year. Now, by comparison, in 2020, there were 365 total fatalities. 2021, almost 6,000. Of that 5,997 number, 5,888 are directly attributed to COVID vaccinations. Go through that again. 2020, adverse reactions, people who died from vaccinations, 365. One a day. COVID-attributed vaccination deaths, 5,888. Now, I'm not one, and I'm not really interested in trying to start a panic on this. I'm really not, and that's not what I want to do. But where I live here in West Virginia, I saw a commercial today. The governor of the state of West Virginia, Jim Justice, came out with a host of bribes to get people to take this vaccine, to get the numbers of people. The people don't want to take it. And they're giving away lottery tickets. They're giving away trucks. They're doing a couple of $1 million lottery drawings from folks who have been vaccinated. You get a vaccine, your name goes in a drawing for $1 million. You get the vaccine, you could win a brand new truck. When I was a child, I remember being vaccinated for a couple of different things. One of them was rubella, German measles. And I'm thinking maybe scarlet fever or something like that. I don't remember rheumatoid fever or something like that. I think I got some kind of bullshit sticker. And was told to shut up and get moving because there was another kid behind me that was screaming. He didn't want it either. But there we go. It never made sense to me that these folks would want me to take a vaccine that has a 95% at its best, at its optimal, a 95% fundamentally effective rate for a virus that has a 99.95% survival rate. I'm not judging anyone. If you think you need to have the vaccine, by God, get out there and get the vaccine. There is a group of people to whom this particular strain of coronavirus is, no question about it, straight up deadly. It kills them easy. Just ask Nipples Cuomo. I haven't forgot about you, Nipples. We still know that you killed 16,000 grandmothers and grandfathers and brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles, you murdering son of a... Haven't forgot about you at all or any of your buddies. Well, we are down to the bottom of the hour, so I think we're going to take a little break. Coming back, I got an interesting question, and it was what I led off the show with in the teaser, which was, well, we'll get to it in a minute. This is ACP, and I am desperately looking for something to play, and no, I don't want that. I don't want that either. Nope. Well, we'll figure out something. We'll be back with more after this brief musical interlude.
Excuse me, have you ever been in Schenectady?
No, I've never been in Schenectady.
Neither have I. Must have been a couple other guys.
I must have been through Everybody's gone away. Said they're moving to L.A. There's not a soul I know around. Everybody's leaving town. Some caught a freight, some caught a plane. Find the sunshine, leave the rain. They said this town will waste your time. I guess they're right, it's wasting mine. Some gotta win, some gotta lose. The time Charlie's got the blues. Good time, Charlie's got the blues. You know my heart keeps telling me you're not a kid at 33. You play around, you lose your wife. You play too long, you lose your life. I got my pills to ease the pain. Can't find a thing to ease the rain. I'd love to try and settle down, but everybody's leaving town. Some gotta win, some gotta lose. Good time, Charlie's got the blues. Good time, Charlie's got the blues. Good time, Charlie's got the blues.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's great. Great stuff.
Echo, feedback. Oh, my God. Anyway, the one of the greatest of the Southern Fried rock and roll guitarists just ahead of that, that was Elvin Bishop, fooled around and fell in love. That, just like they said in the song, he was not good looking, but he sure could play. And then, of course, this song in particular, Good Time Charlie's Got the Blues, was written and performed originally by a guy named Denny Brown. I think, maybe. For our purposes, we're going to call him Denny Brown. Denny was part of his first name. Anyway, but the first time I ever heard it, Elvis had covered it. And rarely, personally, I think rarely can an artist, you know, cover a song. And a lot of people have done him justice, and Elvis is no exception. I mean, it's Elvis. He could sing. It wouldn't matter. Okay, people would shell out money to hear him sing it. You know, I'm a little teapot, and people would go crazy. But usually, I am a fan and an advocate of the songwriter, being a failing one. I understand and certainly have respect for guys that make it or get a song, you know, published. And so I usually like the artist's rendition, the songwriter's rendition. But in this case, while I do dig it, and it's a great tune, and I learned how to play it, because Elvis sung it, and I like what this guy does, I'm going to give this one to the king. I'm going to give this one to E. And it's just that. So, welcome back. A Conservative's Perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio Sound System. Good to be here with you. We do it live a couple times a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And actually, by God, we really did it Tuesdays and Thursdays this week. That hasn't happened in a long time. And maybe to throw everything up, I'll probably do a show tomorrow night. Anyway, but we're back. We do it live Tuesday. It has been all summer. I know. I've been telling you guys I'm trying to get it worked out, and I will. I'm going to be here every chance I can. And then we have a recorded version of the program that goes out over the Mojo 5.0 radio network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you really ought to be, because it is some of the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio out there, just like the fine programming you get here at Patriot Nation Radio. And, of course, I'm referring to United Patriots Uprising, my good friend Gary Benford. Terrific show every other Monday. That means he'll be on this coming Monday. Tom Holman's one of the guests. Let me look through here. And what did he see? Yeah, we got Holman. We'll have Senator Ted Harvey. Hopefully, if we can get that recording set up. Eliana Brooks, Eric Corcoran. It's going to be awesome. Next Monday, United Patriots Uprising, Gary Benford right here on the Patriot Nation radio outlet. See if there's anything else I want to say. No, that's it. We're good. Okay. What if? That was the lead. That was the lead. We've got these election audits that have been going on. And, you know, we've been paying particular attention to the audit in Maricopa County, New Mexico, or Arizona. I'm sorry, Maricopa County, Arizona. And there have been, there's been quite a laundry list of irregularities. Now, there are those of us who, through our background, through our intelligence, through our experience, have seen all the evidence, you know, anecdotal and otherwise, that has been presented to the public, you know, by the media with their varying agendas and their varying narratives. I promise you folks, we don't have one here. Truth, justice, the American way, just like Superman. I mean, that's where we're at. Okay, we're Dudley Do-Right for America. We're Captain America. We're Superman. We're Evel Knievel. We want what's true. And I do not believe truth is that Joe Biden won this election. And there are many other people who do not believe this. Now, we do not know it. We feel it. We think it. We look at it as a matter of faith because, again, based on our experience, intelligence, and backgrounds, we can smell a rat. And it's a big rat. And there have been audits, you know, they're taking place all over the country. They're taking place in Atlanta. There have been a lot of irregularities in Atlanta. There have been a lot of irregularities. Excuse me. I think it's New Hampshire, in Windham County, New Hampshire. And if these were the most honest and fair and transparent and rock-solid, reliable, you-can-count-on-us-not-to-cheat, honest engine elections ever, why in the hell are the Democrats lawyering up all over the place and fighting like mad through the court systems to keep these audits from happening? It would seem to me that if these were the most honest, transparent, uncheatable, unfraudable, unfixable elections in the history of all electionhood, then these audits would bear that out, wouldn't they? The vote tabulations would match up. There wouldn't be any problem. All the I's would be dotted. All the T's would be crossed. There would be no way for any of us to question anything any longer. So what happens? What happens if the election audits go our way, that they find in favor of Trump? What happens? What will the military, the Supreme Court, the people eventually do? How will the military, the Supreme Court, and the people react to the outcome? How will the military move? How will the Supreme Court rule? And eventually, do the masses rise up and take to the streets if it becomes clear, if it becomes clear that the presidential election of 2020 was compromised, was stolen, or at the very least had way too many abnormalities and illegalities, and thus the wrong person is possibly sitting in the White House? What happens if it becomes clear that President Trump was reelected and that the progressives actually stole the election? What happens if we find out the election was manipulated? What happens if? Well, we'll probably find out these answers in the coming months, probably. What about the forensic audits of the popular votes in these contested key states? Now, before the actual election, before the actual election in November, President Trump predicted cheating like you'd never seen before. President Trump said there would be voter fraud like never before in U.S. history. Many people throughout the White House believed and were certain that something felonious was about to happen. At 10:30 on election night, President Trump was up by good margins in the key states. Then the key states shut down the election tabulation of votes for the night. By the way, the stopping of counting votes for the night had never happened before in presidential history. Never. And then when we woke up in the morning after the tallying of votes was supposedly shut down for the night, Joe Biden had pulled ahead. He stayed ahead and he assumed the White House. As of today, as you and I speak, Biden has 306 Electoral College votes and President Trump has 232. 270 votes is the magic number needed to win the presidency. But what about the forensic audits in the key contested states, starting with Arizona, then Georgia, then Pennsylvania, then... Well, the forensic audit of the popular votes in Arizona that's being conducted right now, and they're closing in on finishing up. They're closing in on that. It's intriguing, and it's also a little scary. The forensic audit of popular votes should be able to catch and identify voting irregularities, cheating, abnormalities, and felonious actions. What happens? What happens if not only Arizona flips, but Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin? The vote-winning margins in these states were about 1% or even less. Not a whole lot of cheating and theft required to flip the states if that's actually what historically happened. With Arizona's 11 Electoral College votes, with Georgia's 16, with Pennsylvania's 20, and with Wisconsin's 10, if those slim margins had gone to President Trump rather than Biden, the Electoral College vote would be 289 for Trump, just 249 for Biden. Trump needing only 270 for the win. Maybe that's why the progressives are so determined that the forensic audits should not happen. Maybe that's why the deep state cabal does not want light to shine on the actual votes last November. What would happen next? What's the military do? How does the Supreme Court rule? And then how do we react? How do both patriot and progressive citizens react? Does the military put troops and tanks on the streets, especially in Washington, D.C., to keep Biden in the White House? Does the military arrest Trump for winning? Does the Supreme Court finally man up and hear the case of election fraud? Does the Supreme Court rule that President Trump actually is president? But then the military vetoes the court's decision and elects to keep Biden in the White House. What then do the people do? How then do the masses react to a probable fraudulent election? Do the patriots finally take to the streets for a mostly peaceful protest of the election, or do the Patriots say that they've had enough of the election fraud and the fake president and it gets violent? Does it become Reds, Patriots versus Blue, progressives in our streets? What happens to America if? It's looking more and more as if no matter what, the military will stay with Biden. It's looking more and more woke than the Berkeley campus, and the military drives out Christians and conservatives and constitutionalists. It's more concerned nowadays with fighting a non-existent threat of global warming and a trickle of white supremacy, appearing unconcerned about a rising Chinese communist hegemony in the Pacific and throughout the world. The Supreme Court might be different. There were three Supreme Court members who actually wanted to hear the cases of presidential election fraud. They wanted to see the facts, but it takes four court members to agree to hear a case. The two key members of the Supreme Court would be Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett. It's probable that Barrett and Kavanaugh feel guilty and impotent because of their weak refusal to be actual Supreme Court members and hear tough politically charged cases. The two of them might have actually changed their minds and toughened up and would agree to hear new challenges in the 2020 election. That is if the four states of Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin flip their Electoral College votes to Trump, and thus Trump has exceeded the 270 hurdle, or will the Supreme Court cower again just as it did last December? It's hard to tell at this date if all this reads like a historical chapter from an election held in a banana republic south of the border, or does it read like a cheap novel that no one could conceivably believe would play out here in the United States? The military, the Supreme Court, and you and I will have a lot to say either way. Do patriots just wait till 2022 or 2024 and let Biden stay, even if not actually elected? Do the progressives say that under no circumstances, including the jailing of political opponents, does President Trump ever get back into where he was legally elected? We need to pay close attention. I got to wrap this up. We need to pay close attention to the audits that are going on now and throughout the summer. What happens if by Labor Day, more than half the American people believe there was indeed election fraud and criminality? It might not be pretty. It might get seriously ugly. But these professional forensic audits are necessary. They have to be done professionally. They must be done accurately. They will have a big say in who resides at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue for the next 3 years. Maybe. We live in interesting times. We absolutely do. And they're thoughts to seriously ponder. Because it's not going to be, okay, well, we fine for President Trump, but Joe Biden's going to go, what? Who? Really? Well, my gosh, I'm not supposed to be here. Jill, honey, call the movers. There's been a terrible mistake. No, that's not going to happen. He's not leaving. And I really don't know how it plays out. The only thing I can see very clearly, is the potentiality for a lot of violence. A lot of people could get hurt. BLM and Antifa think they know how to tear Jack up. I'm not advocating that, guys. You know, I'm not advocating anything like that. But as this continues, it's going to come to a point where, you know, talking, negotiation, rhetoric, invective, platitudes, reasoning, none of that's going to work. Nothing that involves a dialogue of any kind is going to work. It really doesn't work now. And we're going to hit that point. We're going to hit that moment of critical mass. And Katie, bar the door. I don't know what's going to happen. But I guarantee you, BLM and Antifa have no clue. None. That's all the time we've got. I see Guapo is on, and we're happy about that. Always happy to see the handsome one in the house. Let me go ahead and pull this man up. Hey, Mark, how is everything?
What's happening, James?
It is you. It is you. My time here is done. My race is run for the day, and I'm going to turn it over to you. How's the weather down south? You guys doing good?
We got crappy rain right now.
We have had beautiful weather here the last 3 days. I mean, literally, not a cloud in the sky. It's been absolutely beautiful. We've been blessed. And I know you got a big show. I'm wanting to hear, since I'm in the school business myself, how these folks are going to work on invalidating and negating the threat, the real threat, societal threat, that they're wanting to bring into our educational systems with the critical race theory.
Well, that's their plan, and they're slipping it in different ways. Here in Florida, our great governor, Ron DeSantis, has said no critical race theory in our schools. So they're coming up with clever ways to sneak it in, like things are called equity in education. It's
right.
A scam. It's a training. They're training the teachers to use critical race theory principles in their teaching method.
Not necessarily pushing the curriculum.
And they're not pushing the curriculum. See, that's how they're getting around it. It's not the curriculum.
No, it's how they teach the curriculum. And by using those concepts, it's ingrained into every subject.
And then if they happen to get a liberal school board to go in their favor, then they can usher the critical race theory in pretty easily. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, and this is frightening stuff because these guys, you know, that Hitler told the adults, I'm not worried anymore. I have your children. And
yeah.
He was right, because in the 1920s with the Hitler Youth and all the youth societies that were set up in Nazi Germany, yeah, he had an entire generation of young kids. And when they became adults, he sent them to war to take over the world.
Right on.
Okay, I was preaching kind of heavy, and I don't want to drag you down. I'm going to get off here. Ladies and gentlemen, the handsome one himself, and we're happy to see him back, hopefully, on a regular basis, Mark Hoffman. Have a terrific show, Guapo. Have a terrific show.
Oh, yeah. For some reason, you too. Thanks a lot. Ladies and gentlemen, that's James Bostic and the Conservatives Perspective, heard Tuesdays and Thursdays here on the Patriot Nation radio show. We're going to have a great show on tap for you tonight. I have a school board member. Mark Johnson is going to join us, his wife Arlene, and we're going to talk about a little update, a little more information, a little more things came out about this equity in education, which some of us believe, after looking and combing through it and reading a lot about it, that it's backdoor critical race theory, as you heard some of you there, as we were just speaking about how they are using it in their teaching method and not as a curriculum. It's pretty scary, scary stuff. So I want you all to stay tuned. We're going to be there back right now in just a couple of minutes.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
That's right, folks. Patriot Nation Radio.
Thank you for listening to Patriot Nation Radio, 347-637-3942.
Attention conservatives, big social media is targeting conservatives like you and me in an effort to silence us and the truth. The free speech social media that you have waited for is here at LibertyRush.com. No longer do you have to be distracted by fake news. Join the war on fake news at LibertyRush.com, the official alternative with no libtard rhetoric. Guaranteed. LibertyRush.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Dave Bray, America's favorite patriotic rocker, and you are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Network.
I never knew about at a funeral or like the last day when an officer has passed, and they actually go and the dispatch will close basically down the radio air for emergency only. And then she will call the badge number, or he will call the badge number from dispatch, and obviously there's never an answer. Brave soul has passed away in the line of duty. Felt like something needed to be done or to recognize that. And that's what the song is about, basically. It's about an officer who's, you know, gone down in the line of duty, and, you know, he's given his all. And, you know, when they do reach out for the last call, he answers back, and these are his words. And one thing a lot of people don't know, I know a lot of cops, you know, in and out of uniform. They are very human, just like you and I. They pick and choose what laws they uphold, but they have to uphold the ones that are put in place by our representatives. And our representatives are the people that we put in office. And the same people that are out there with their signs are the same people that are putting lunatics in office. Here's the wake-up call, people. Don't come down on the men and women in blue for doing their job. Come down on your representatives for passing these BS laws, and get involved in your political on a local level and fix what the problem is. Fix the problems in our laws today. Get involved in your local politics and get moving. Get moving in America. Become a citizen. A citizen doesn't mean you sit back and collect a paycheck from the government. A citizen means you are a part of the government, a part of the citizenry, a part of the voting and voicing public. And that's what I think the song says moreover than anything else. And if people want to hear it, because I know they do, please go to Dave Bray, USA. Right now on Facebook, that's DaveBray USA.
That's right, folks. DaveBrayUSA.com. Music on a Mission. Storyteller Edition's out. He's got some new stuff. You can go to all your favorite music places where you get your music and find Dave Bray. He's America's most rockinest patriotic rocker. There we go. That's what we were looking for. He is America's most patriotic rocker, and he's got some good stuff. You want to make sure you check him out as soon as you human possibly can. I want to say hello to Rob Christensen, Rob, Liberty Rush Rob right there, ladies and gentlemen. Check him out. Say hello. He is the creator and the mastermind of Liberty Rush, libertyrush.com, social media without the libtarded rhetoric. Jack Martin's watching. Allie's watching. Allie doing great stuff. My buddy Nick Scott's watching. I want to say hello to everybody in the live feed. Please share this live feed. It's very important. Gary Beck is watching. Gary Beck is going through it up in Bay County. We're going to have him on again here pretty soon and talk about his plight, what the heck's going on with him. Bay County Commission and the sheriffs and everybody totally shaft him over. We got a great show on tap for you tonight. I'm not going to go wait any longer because we got Mark Johnson, the wife, Arlene, coming on. As you remember, a couple weeks ago, we had this tragic event taking place. My wife missed the connecting flight, so it was a kind of a train wreck. So today we're just going to have Mark and Arlene on so we can explain further in depth with a little bit of an update on what's going on with this equity in education. I've done some research with these fine folks. They came to my house. We looked at all this stuff. It's unbelievable what it is. It's undeniable what it is. People that say that it's not undeniable have not read it or are lying blatantly on purpose. We also have a school board member that was on the show, Jimmy Lodato. Outright lying. I'm sorry, Jimmy. You said there was no training taking place, and we have absolute proof that training has taken place in Hernando County School District for equity in education. There is hands-down proof. We have teachers saying, yes, I took the training. So it happened. And he lied on the show and said no such training has taken place. So I don't know what the deal is with that and why it's like that. I have no clue, but that's the deal. Welcome to the show, Mark and Arlene. Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Would you like me to get started?
I enjoyed that. Well, now let's say hello and how have you been? How's your week? How's things?
Yeah, week's been a little exciting, but going on. Hey, but you know, we were listening to the news earlier, and to me, it's exciting. Where Governor Abbott in Texas is going to complete the wall that Trump started, and our Governor DeSantis, is sending down a National Guard to help protect the border. I think both of those are fantastic things. Great future.
Absolutely. I'm almost to the point where like Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Texas, and a couple of these, we just succeed and become our own country so we can take care of this ourselves.
That might be easier than Texas building that wall, just from a legal standpoint, because I'm a retired attorney. The border is federal. I mean, the upkeep and to secure a border is a federal thing. The land, however, is state. I think no matter what happens, I think this will probably wind up in court. Hope that the Texans win. But it is a strange thing because securing a border is a federal duty. But the land, they confiscated that land by eminent domain from the state, specifically for the wall.
And if you listen to what Arlene's saying, in 1789, when they had the real first convention, when we formed the real government, and one of the things they were looking at is singular treaties in protecting the borders.
Right.
They realized that the 13 colonies were individual. They'd have all kinds of different arrangements, and they'd be pitted against each other. So that this goes back to the original founding.
But the real issue here is they took that land from the state by eminent domain specifically to build the wall. That's what Trump did. Now, they said no, they're not building the wall. They want that land back. So, I mean, I guess they could build a wall like, you know, a number of feet inside of that border. I don't know what's going to happen, but from a legal standpoint, I'm very interested.
Well, you know who supports eminent domain, folks? I hate to say this, but our favorite president, President Trump, favors eminent domain.
Yeah.
Of course, he's a real estate mogul and a businessman, and now he's the president. So of course, he's going to be for eminent domain.
Well, he's the one that used it to start building the wall. But now, you know, Texas, this is interesting. From a legal standpoint, I'm finding it very, very interesting. I really hope Texas gets it back.
I hope we secure the border.
Because we can't continue on this way with all the drugs coming in and all the cartels and the gangs. And, God, it's just incredible. Anyway, that's my thought on the wall.
And I want to let you guys know that I'm on the show full time. I will not be going off. I will not be chasing down rent-a-cars and airplane schedules. And
How's your wife? Is she back? Is she okay?
Yeah, she made it. She's banged up and bruised. She went rolling down a river, down the rocks.
Oh,
and banged.
She took a vacation is what she did.
Yes. She went up
That's
to Pennsylvania
wonderful.
To enjoy herself. And the whole trip was ruined by the horrible flight.
Oh, that's a shame. That really is a shame.
Do not fly United and never stop in Dulles. If you ever do not go to Dulles.
Well, no.
If the connecting flight is through D.C., take another flight.
Yeah, we had a terrible experience with Delta one time.
Oh, yeah.
When we think that they went on strike and we got stranded in Miami coming from Barcelona. Oh, it was terrible. I mean, we couldn't get back home. Oh, it was a mess. It was a real mess.
Yeah.
So I don't think we would go on Delta again.
I don't know if you've heard, but the Arizona audit, outside of Braille ballots, has been completed. So we'll be getting some news out of Arizona.
Good.
And they're forensically checking the paper because of what happened over there in Georgia, where they found like 50,000 votes on false paper with printed little markings for the votes that were not written in by a pen or, you know, or a utensil given at the election site to fill in the little oval.
Yeah, they said it felt like a skip when they were printing it on off a printing press is what it sounded like.
I also think Pennsylvania might be looking at, you know, what Arizona was doing. So I don't know. We may have a couple of states that are, you know, looking into doing an audit, I hope.
And I know that they sent a delegate down to Arizona, the swing states that are in question. I believe all sent delegates down to Arizona to check out their audit and their audit process and what was going on. So,
what we have going on here, coming up in 2022 is a great election. There's going to be a lot of good positions open. But I'm telling you, we got to get rid of Nikki Fried. You know, I do investigations, and most of your listeners know about G's and CCWs. So I have a G license. I went to renew it, and pre-COVID, you could go down to Tampa, walk in there, drop your papers off, and 15 minutes later, you were done. I went.
Right.
I had to call to make an appointment, and this is, I'm going back 3 weeks ago after I qualified. They told me they, I couldn't go down there until the end of July. So I mailed my papers up to Tallahassee. Now they're bouncing them back for something stupid. So, you know, I'm not worried the license doesn't expire until the end of August, but she's got to go. She's messed that up entirely. There's no reason
right.
for a three-month delay to wait to file papers when literally all you have to do is walk in and hand them a piece of paper and say goodbye, you know, and get a receipt. So we need to get her out.
Yeah, I agree.
That would be that'll be a great thing to do.
Because just think, if she runs for governor and makes it, what's going to happen, and how far will equity in education go?
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be a complete reversal of what DeSantis is doing. He's great.
So we need to stop that now. And the other way that we do it is to do it in the legislature, get it where there was a bill. Well, they have the one bill that almost made it in civics, where it was going to be an additional half credit on constitutional law, I think it was. And that would have been wonderful if it passed the Senate. I think it did pass the House, but it didn't pass the Senate. And that's why DeSantis made the ruling that he did, the executive order saying, hey, we just ain't going to do it. We're going to teach what happened in our documents by the founders. And we firmly believe in it. That's what should be taught.
And he made prayer time in school a thing again.
Well, they were doing that in this district.
Yes, they were doing that here anyway. You know, that 1 or 2 minutes, yeah, which is really good. I think that's really good.
The other thing that came out of the session that was really good was that $9.3 million for, I think they're calling it an economic educational center, where they're going to do vocational training, and it's a collaboration between the school district, PHSC, and the VOCC. And when I was on the school board, we tried that, but it was a different era. It was a different VOCC, a different PHC, and the composite of the school board was different. And it was more of a turf war. We never got it going. So that's a wonderful thing. That'll open up a lot of opportunities for people. You know, that's one of the reasons I got into what I did, that there was no basic training in the building trades. So we started that nonprofit, T-Vault, where we train basic skills to get people entry-level jobs. And real fast, we do a 10-week course, 2 hours, one night a week. We charge $25 because it's not about the money. It's about giving people skills. But now the school district is saying, hey, that's got to fly. They're offering for high school students ages 16 to 18 a four-week gig in the summer, 2 weeks in a classroom and 2 weeks on a job site. Building something, and that's going to be an amazing opportunity for the kids in the school system to gain some experience, especially the ones who are not going to college, so they can have some kind of education and a career path. I wholeheartedly endorse and support that. I did the whole time when I was on the school board. That's all I concentrated on was vocational training, because it's an area that was always, like, you know, just not there.
Think about how important it is. Folks don't realize how important it is, but right now everybody's learning how to program and run and code and make video games or run machinery with a computer or fly drones and do all this kind of stuff.
Sure.
And electrical construction, plumbing,
mm-hmm.
and things like that, nobody's being trained up for. So what's going to happen, there's going to be a shortage in these fields, and they're going to be able to charge exorbitant amounts of money to get the work done and become very comfortable in your lifestyle.
Well, I have a friend who is a master plumber. And in fact, he teaches the classes for us. It's Dennis Farman. He's now master plumbing. And he was saying he's paying starting plumbers upwards of $25 an hour because he can't find anybody at this point. So it's an awesome career path right now for somebody who's good with their hands.
You know, back in like 2014 when Mark was on the board, we went up to Tallahassee to look at a 3D printing seminar. We came back saying, you have to start introducing 3D printing. That's being used all over for everything, from the medical field to manufacturing to everything. And we got it in there. I mean, It's not a full-time program because there's no curriculum out of Tallahassee for it, but they're including it in a number of areas. And it's just so much, first of all, it's fun for the kids to learn because you actually get to see something that you built.
I had fun with that. You know, Arlene's right. I'd go into a fifth grade class with a scanner, and I would scan the teacher's head in 3D, and you'd see a 3D model of her appear on a whiteboard in the classroom, and the kids would all, you know, giggle and ooh and ah. And then I'd come home and print one. And this is before the printer, before they had 3D printers in the school. And I'd make little bobbleheads, and I'd bring it back, and they got to hold it in their hands. And you saw the light bulbs go off, so they realized the potential is. It was awesome, really awesome. I was trying to convince PHSC to collaborate with the school district and get a commercial-grade printer. I saw where there would be a career path to start teaching CAD programming in the high schools. And then continue it into mechanical engineering at PHSC, and using a 3D printer for R&D work locally to make it self-sufficient. Yeah. And it would have taught a whole set of skills that we could open up a whole shebang. Maybe that'll happen in this new education center they're talking about. Who knows? But it was expensive. That was going to run $500,000, and nobody had the school district didn't have the money. The PHSC didn't have the money.
That is something that's really being utilized everywhere. Do you know the Invisalign, instead of having braces, the dentists now do it right in the office. There's so many things that they do right in the office now. The medical profession uses it a lot. But manufacturing, it's incredible. Even the big companies, even back in 2014, like Boeing uses it.
Yeah, fuel injector.
I'm telling you, it's like incredible what you can use with this 3D printer. And now that they're starting to use different composites, it's not just this plastic stuff anymore. I mean, you could build a house. It's just absolutely amazing once they get more into different materials can use. It opens up the world, and that's what's being used.
You know what they could do, Mark, which is wild? They make cadavers. They make frogs where when you dissect it, all the parts are there. The bones are hard, and the organs are softer, and the skin is a different consistency. So you take a knife and you slit through it. From what they say, it's like dissecting a real frog. And you can do the same thing with a cadaver. If you want to teach somebody all about the human body, you can have it made of plastic. You're not taking anybody's life. You're not stealing a corpse. You know, you print one. It's wild, really wild.
Smithsonian Institute in New York uses it all the time. They found there was going to be a road that was being built, and I believe it was in Peru.
Pan American Highway.
And when they started digging there, they found all these dinosaur bones, and they did not have time to actually excavate all of it. So they brought in these huge 3D printers, huge, like the size of, you know, like a dining room table or more, and they printed
They scanned it.
Right.
They scanned the area, and from the scans, they went back and printed out 19 sets, one for each of their museums worldwide.
It's really amazing what 3D printing opens up for the world. Even even vases that are like from the Ming Dynasty, you know, all these hundreds and thousands of years old, and you're afraid to even touch them or whatever, but you could scan them and print them, and then you can actually hold it in your hand because it's the printed copy, but you can't tell the difference. You cannot tell the difference.
And with Arlene saying, there was something called the rubbing Buddha, the laughing Buddha, and people would rub his belly, and around his gown were the seven stages of his life in hieroglyphics, and it had worn out. So what they did is they scanned it, and they manipulated it, and they brought up all the images so they could see what was on the gown that got worn out from people rubbing it for good luck.
Well, it's been fun talking about 3D printing. We really got to invest more into that. I agree. My son loved it, and anytime I talk about Mark Johnson with my kid, I say, he's the guy who brought 3D printing into the school system. Here.
That's right.
And then he goes, oh, wow, cool, you know.
Yeah, but I still have a printer here that doesn't want to talk to my computer anymore, so it sits in the corner.
Yeah.
We've had some developments, possibly in the equity and education training story that we broke a couple weeks ago. And I want to just do a little update and then, you know, talk a little bit about that. And then,
Arlene should probably just recap what originally happened very shortly, and then we can tell you what's going on from there.
Right. Because the last time I was on, things were so chaotic. I think it really deserves just a teeny bit of an update, not even an update, just going over a little bit of what I spoke about, a little bit clarity here. Just to let everybody know, I submitted Freedom of Information request to the county, and it was emailed to the communications specialist, communications and government relations. And that's where I was directed to send my request pursuant to Freedom of Information. Okay, so that's I'll tell you a little bit about that. But there's three areas that I just wanted to touch on right now. Equity in Education, which is a training program. That one I did the most research on so far. The next one is Crucial Conversations, which is also a training program. And that I just did a little bit of research on. And the third one is Equal Opportunity Schools, or EOS.
You should say that all these trainings were geared to staff and to teachers.
Well, I'll get to that. Right,
Not geared to the students.
Correct. Well, the EOS is a program to reduce something called the achievement gap. That all school districts throughout the country have been mandated to see if they can reduce that gap. And that gap is the variance between the lower performing student scores and the higher performing student scores. Okay, so where I got most of my information in writing was from an email I sent on February 23rd and received the response from the school district on March 1st. And that provided the bulk of the information that I had in my articles. In that email, I was told that I could call up and make an appointment to review the training manual that I had asked for, the Equity in Education. And I called up. I said, I don't want to view it. I want to own it. So I went. I had to pay for it. It was $31. I have my receipt. I have that. Says all of that. Throughout the manual, they refer to minority students as minoritized students. Now, meritocracy is something that's gone over quite a bit in the manual, and the manual has in the back of it something called talking point cards. The cards are absolutely incredible. One of the pages in the book says the myth of meritocracy. What they say is that people advance on the basis of their merit, and this training manual says that's really bad. The talking point cards says that meritocracy undermines the growth mindsets, the collaborative instructional practices, and the emotional well-being. That's why meritocracy and merit is not good. They talk about collaborative learning throughout. One of the pages in the book clearly shows thumbs down. You should not ask for a right answer. That's the wrong thing to do. It tells you you have to have the collaborative approach to this. You have to have the collaborative effort to establish a goal or a defined outcome. You cannot ask for a right answer. I mean, it gets worse and worse.
Well, I know when I was watching that, when I was with my son and he was taking the Common Core math was in the schools, and when they were teaching the Common Core math, they were saying, we don't care what answer you have. We want to see how you got to the answer. It was more important, whether it was right or wrong.
Well, that's crazy. If you're going to you're an astronaut and you're going to the moon, you want to make sure someone has the right answers on how you're going to get there and back.
Right.
I mean, it's really crazy.
You would hope the math and the physics behind the flight.
Exactly. You want the right answer.
We don't care how you got to that answer, as long as we can tell us how you did it, and then we'll apply it to the rest.
Right. Oh, boy, I'll tell you, this is nuts. Then they also talk in the talking point cards, it says to reject assimilation. And why? Learning becomes less relevant for the student whose culture identity is not recognized. It's a misattribution of the sources, and when it's successful, this non-assimilation, minoritized students are seen as overcoming their culture. So in other words, if you assimilate, they say, well, you assimilated because you overcame your culture, and that's bad. So don't, you know, you should remain a minoritized student, keep your culture, and reject assimilation. It doesn't make any sense. Then it also says in the talking point cards to combat colorblindness, not to embrace it.
In other words, combat it.
Right. I mean, normally we would say, well, to be colorblind is great. Little kids are colorblind. Yep. They don't see anything. They play.
Yep.
But
they
no, they want you to combat colorblindness. And they say that colorblindness supports the idea of meritocracy. Therefore, it's bad. And it's an inaccurate message that everyone has equal access to opportunities, and it perpetuates a deficit mindset about students and their families.
I don't know about you, Mark, but I grew up with Martin Luther King, and he said, don't judge a man by his color, judge him by his character. And that's how we've learned to do things, and that's how we do things. So to say all of a sudden that character doesn't matter, it's the color that matters, is like
it's crazy.
Going backwards.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. And what really gets me is that people, especially Jimmy Lodato, kept saying, I'm lying. I have the book. I wrote down what I'm talking to you now, the pages where I got it, and the card numbers where I got it. So if anyone wants it.
Hold on real fast. Real fast, 1 second. I got a question that's related to this from the live feed.
Sure,
It says here, do they have the training guide that was given to the teachers or a training guide that came with the book they bought? The training guide, I believe the book they bought, is the training guide that went to the teachers.
It's a participation guide.
It's called Equity in Education from the Inside Out Participant Guide. So the manual or the book that I'm referring to is the Participant Guide.
That's the actual book that the teachers and staff are receiving.
I believe so. That's what I was told in the emails back to me.
Those emails were passed along by Freedom of Information Act request that was put in by Arlene and Mark.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
We are at the bottom of the hour, and we are talking equity and education with Mark Johnson and his awesome wife, Arlene. And we are right now just recapping from the last episode so that we can give the updates of what's coming up. And Mark wants to tell us something here later in the show that's very important, but we'll get to that here shortly.
Yesterday, I sent another request pursuant to the Freedom of Information. Now, this time, I really want to get some detailed information. So, in addition, I am now requesting, pursuant to Florida State Statute Chapter 119, information as a follow-up to your March 1st, 2021 response to my Freedom of Information request. From your response, Equity in Education was funded by the ESSER/CARES Act and approved July 2020. Was the Equity in Education in your response the Franklin Covey Equity in Education from the Inside Out? If not, please provide all the documentation, information, manuals, et cetera, regarding and concerning that equity in education. If your response referred to the Franklin Covey, which is the one that they had me buy, which that's what it is because she referred to it a number of times, Franklin Covey, Equity and Information, what was the full, total, and itemized cost paid by the district for equity in education, including but not limited to manuals, participation guides, transportation support, et cetera? Who approved the district's original ESSER submission? Provide a copy of the purchase order for equity in education, including but not limited to manuals, participation guides. What date in July 2020 was the submission approved in the district? How many copies to the manuscript participation guide was paid for and received? To whom were the manuals, participation guides distributed to? Please provide the names and titles of all attendees of the training sessions, including but not limited to facilitators, presenters, teachers, guidance counselors, social workers, etc. Who was using the manuals, participation guides, and the dates and location of such training sessions? What are the dates of the next and future training sessions utilizing equity in education? So that went out yesterday. We'll see what we get.
Now, Mark, you're aware of this, and I want to repeat back. I think that the school board met on June 8th, I believe. On June 5th, in Frick Center Indo Schools, there was an open-ended question posted about equity in education being trained, the training going on in the school district for teachers. And part of it says, if anyone has attended those trainings who would like to comment and tell us your experiences, it's okay. And I don't want to read the name of the teacher who said, yes, I attended the equity in education training. And replying to her was Tammy Lodato, who said, thank you. Many times the students don't realize what they get. 3 days later, Jimmy Lodato at the school district, I believe, says something like, oh, I can't believe all this mumbo jumbo.
Yep.
So what the hell is he talking about? You know, and by the way, you're on that thread too, Mark. But that's,
yep.
You know. Yeah, so.
I'm chiming in.
You know,
there's a gentleman in there. I asked him to come on the show and tell that he had received the training. Well, and everybody shall remain nameless because, you know,
well,
they want to come on themselves.
I've also heard someplace that, and I don't know if it's true or not, so, but that there's some intimidation going on with the school district. But I don't know that.
Asked him to come on and explain what he got out of the training, and he has never responded back, and I have not seen him posting lately, so I don't know what happened there.
Well, I want to just say one thing. There's some parts of this training manual that could be good if it's used properly, not with all this craziness that I read just now, which is in the manual. If you take all of that out, and it would leave like maybe two pages in there, the equity model has in there what the teacher should have for the children, high expectations for the student. The student should learn to have self-awareness, and they should have, between the student and the teacher, authentic relationships. Not a bad thing. I mean, but it's so general, it says really nothing. You can't really argue against it.
What gets us is the fact that all this critical race theory is in there, and it's blatantly in that book. Somebody should have took the time at the district level and said, no, this is wrong. We can't use this book.
Yep.
And it was used. And
I have a caller on the line. I believe we are Danielle.
Danielle.
She has a question, and she wants to talk a little bit about just what you were speaking about just a second ago, Mark. Danielle, welcome to the show.
Hello, Danielle.
Hi, guys. How are y'all?
Hi, Danielle.
We're good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So just for the record, Danielle Underwood, and commenting on the feed that you were talking about, Mark, that is through Frick Center Indo Schools, which is my group that I've had for about 4 to 5 years.
Yep.
And
I got
you're
that off there
correct,
today.
Mark.
Yep.
You're absolutely correct, Mark. I've been talking with people, and again, I won't mention names because I do keep people confidential that are within the district and teachers that come to me on a daily basis. A lot of teachers that
unless they want to come on and tell us who they are, they're more than welcome to come on and speak to us We are here.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
So if you're Hernando County Chief and you're listening, call in. Press
okay,
one.
I have the two other ones. That one was all, I mentioned I had three things, equity and education. The second one was crucial conversations, and the third one was equal opportunity schools. Neither one of those have I gone in depth. I have gone with the equity in schools. So let me just tell you something about the equity in equal opportunity schools. In the 2019,
I think Daniel wanted to add something real fast, Arlene, before I hit that phone number. I think she was trying to add something real quick. So before we move on, Daniel, go ahead.
Are we there?
Are you good?
Yeah, go ahead, Daniel.
Oh, okay. So I guess what I was going at is that they spent just under $25K, I was told, because the board does not need to approve anything that's under $25K. So when Jimmy Lodato was saying he knew nothing about it, it was not brought before the board, but I believe that they have been aware of it. So in when you get that records request back that you just requested for, the people that approved it are the three top.
But I never said that the board approved it. I just gave the dates that were given to me that it was approved. And I asked who approved it.
I never
said that. But right away, he started saying, I'm lying, and he wouldn't even look at the information that I had that came from the school district.
Yeah, Danielle,
correct,
this was professional development. And the professional development is approved by the school board. So they knew the development that was going to happen. They may not approve the dollar amount, but they approved it. In fact, in some of those posts, a date was mentioned of May 25th. So we went and listened.
No, that's not it, though.
We went and listened to that workshop. And what they were talking about there was closing the equity gap, but they were speaking more specifically with students with disabilities. And it didn't have any relevance to what was going on. And they are working hard to do that. And that's a great and noble thing. It needs to be done, that achievement gap.
But not through critical race theory.
I currently asked my contact at the district, I said, are they going to be destroying these materials and canceling any further trainings? And the answer I got was that they no longer have any more materials left. They've already used them. The trainings happen. There's no new training scheduled, but they are going to be using a new program called UDL, Universal Design for Learning.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they're going to call it. I asked for a copy of the materials for that program, and they told me that they don't have any specific materials they're going to use, so they can't give me anything just yet. So I'm thinking this is their copy for critical race theory.
My stepdaughter, who's a special ed teacher in Virginia.
Hang on, I have that in an email.
Yeah, she's using it there.
I can give you an idea. That universal training or theory is more a technique on how to teach. It's not necessarily critical race theory gets into UDL.
It's
tricky.
It's like equity and education. I'm
going to read this. I'm going to read a little thing from my daughter. She says ULD is tricky. That's the one that can lend itself to CRT and all that cultural stuff, because part of it is you take into account every student's background, knowledge, social economic status, culture, language spoken at home. The level of privilege is mentioned here often, although not in the official capacity, their experiences thus far in their community and school, et cetera. This is where you don't assume they know what McDonald's is, because the kid may have just moved here from Haiti last week. You don't send home everything in English. You translate it into the guardian's preferred language, et cetera. So that's the ULD. It doesn't sound like a bad model. You're taking into account some differences a kid may have, but you're not taking away the thing that made America great, that individualism, that competition. You know, you're not separating people into different social, economical, and race groups.
You're kind of Mark, from what Christine said, they were using the same language, you know, the nice part of the language. They were using self-awareness, authentic relationships, and high expectations.
Yes.
And that's what she said. That's come straight from this book. But, again, if you use just that and not the critical race theory part, then it's not subverting, you know, our way of life.
That's what I was saying.
It's a critical race theory.
That's
point.
Exactly what I was saying.
Yeah.
Right. So my message to the people is that keep your eye out on this UDL because it can be used, like you said, it can be tricky and it can be used as critical race theory, and they're trying to use this universal design for learning as a way to tell parents, oh, we're not doing critical race theory, but they'll sneak it in that way. So parents, the power comes in numbers. You all need to stand up. Everybody needs to be going to school board meetings. It starts at a local level. We need to make a change. 2022 is coming quickly.
Well, I'm going to make an announcement at the end. We just went over to the Northcliffe Baptist Church, and we submitted a form to request using their space there. I would like to have a town hall meeting, show everyone what I have found so far, show them the book, show them all of the emails back and forth between myself and the school district to show that all of this is on the up. This came from them. I didn't get any information elsewhere. This came straight from the district. And I think we have a date that's the first Tuesday in August, because the school board meeting is shortly after that. And I thought it would be very good if we could, once people see what I'm talking about and see that this clearly is critical race theory, in total, get as many people as possible to go to that board meeting and demand information. Are you going to use this again? Are you using any program that's similar to it? What programs are you using to reduce the achievement gap? And we would like to see that. That would be very good. But I would like to get in touch with as many parents and other people as possible for that August 3rd, I think it is, that August, first Tuesday. Yeah. So that's the Northcliffe Baptist Church. If anyone is listening, this is costing me hundreds of dollars. I'll probably put out a jar if anyone wants to put a donation in there to defray the cost, because I have to pay for the room. I have to pay for if we want to make the PowerPoint presentation, because not everybody is going to be able to see the book if I hold it up. So we'll make the PowerPoint presentation. And there was one other thing that I had to pay for. So it comes to like $350 to $400, which, if I get no donations, that's fine too. My reputation is at stake here. You know, Jimmy kept calling me a liar. He kept saying I'm talking mumbo jumbo. This has got to be corrected.
Another question from the live feed from Anthony.
Sure.
He's saying, would you guys be willing to go to the board meeting a little early and show folks outside, like a little presentation for the people who aren't going in?
Yeah, we could work.
We
could be there early. That's not a bad idea either.
It's not, but the town hall meeting is probably a lot better, because I can actually spread out on a table, show all of the information, you know, like I did at your house, Mark.
Right.
You know, I had the table there, and I could pull out little things here and there. And I opened the book, and I showed cards. I took out the cards one at a time to show people the cards. That, you know, the talking point cards. I mean, I could, but I think you'd get a lot more if we couldn't do it any earlier, because it takes a few weeks, they said, to get the permission to do it. I don't think that
we don't have the permission yet. We just asked them today. So
the administrator there, the woman who's the administrative assistant, doesn't think we'll have any trouble, but they have to wait till the deacons approve it. So that'll be a couple of weeks before.
Arlene,
so,
I just want to clarify on your reputation and stuff. I think you've done an amazing job at getting the information and sharing it with the people. And
you can see how passionate she is
about
it.
I'm not hearing you very clearly.
She's praising,
wanted to comment on your reputation and say I wouldn't worry about that, because you've done an amazing job at getting the information and sharing it with
the people. Thank you. I really appreciate that. I worked really hard on this. And I'm supposed to
retire.
Let me just what we've seen with this is a complete denial that this ever happened. To all of a sudden, maybe it happened. It did happen, but we had nothing to do with it. But they did have something to do with it, and maybe now they'll take own it and say, we knew about it. Well, and that would be a good thing to see some honesty come out of
right.
the school board.
But here's something Ladies interesting. The school district never once refuted my claims that
right.
the training manual contains critical race theory precepts. Never, never once refuted it. Never.
Right. And just so folks know that are listening or watching on the live feed, these fine folks have done a deep dive research, line by line, page by page, section by section research into this book. And they're not, so they really looked into it. And they were trying to debunk the idea.
Well,
trying to debunk the idea that...
Yeah, Mark did a ton of research for me. He pulled out all these things, and then I went through it with a fine-tooth comb. And I have to bring this up for a reason, that the Equal Opportunity Schools, the district paid Equal Opportunity Schools $124,000 and $112,000 for programs to reduce the achievement gap. What this program does, what it's doing now, has already started, is putting the lower performance students in the district's advanced classes, AP, IB, and the ACE classes. That's what the whole program is about. The first phase, they did a survey to get which students might be good to go into these classes. In other words, they might have been good in something else. Not really good, but showed some promise in something else. And so
right.
they would give them a lot of support and whatever. And I brought this up because one of the articles that Mark, you know, printed out for me was from New York. They did away with merit totally, totally from their advanced classes. Now their AP classes is on a lottery, on a lottery. Who wins by that? Nobody. Nobody wins by that. I mean, realistically, what happens is the standards have to come down. There's no way if people, you know, I don't want to see that happen here. That we have right. a lot of kids in both the AP classes and in the IB classes. I don't know exactly how they, everything I read, and I have a ton of information on the Equal Opportunity Schools. Everything is generalized. Everything. So I don't even know what kind of support they're going to give. Is it, you know, 5 days a week, an hour a day? Is it, I don't know. They don't give you any information. And if the school board approved that, which they did, if they approve that, how do they know what's going to happen? We listened to the workshop where it was approved in 2019, and I was amazed. To me, the presenter, the one who was from Equal Opportunity Schools, is a great salesman. She was phenomenal. To me, I would have said, whoa, wait a second. How is that going to work? What exactly are you going to do? How is that going to help the students that really are not performing up to snuff? I would ask, and I would say, I don't want to give my consensus on this right now. I want to think about it and get more information. That's the way, you know, unless I see something in writing, I don't have it. That's the lawyer in me. I have to see it in writing or else I don't have it. And not one of the five said, I want to see this or had any questions. All five of them thought it was great. All of them. It was just amazing.
That was two different workshops in June of 2019 and June of 2020 when the presentations from EOS were made before the board.
It's crazy. And so that's not equity in schools. That's the EOS, the Equal Opportunity Schools. The third one that I had mentioned is the Crucial Conversations. Now, that one, the only thing I got is just very little information. I know that it's a training program, and the only thing that I know about it for sure, that it's a how to have conversations about equity without it leading people towards getting offended or defensive.
You know,
that's it.
When I watched the May 25th workshop, Daniel, you'll find it interesting. They were talking about closing the achievement gap for the students with disabilities, and they're really making great strides and really taking a lot of interest in doing that. Hopefully, that was an area when I was on the board that was always like the the redheaded stepchild, never got handled. They're finally waking up and taking care of that need. So I think there's a change in the regime going on over there. There'll be a change in attitudes, and if that kicks in, that the district should go from a B to an A, and that would be an amazing achievement.
So now we're going to have some school board races coming up, and there's a young lady who's running in my, I guess she's running in District 1. And I don't know. I don't know much about her. She swears that she's going to be this great conservative-minded person. I have no idea. What do you think about these races?
Well, I heard her speak. She's 26 years old, and her main platform is that I'm a mom. That was her main, and we should have moms on the school board. That was the main. That was it.
You know, Mark,
if I could just chime in for a second. I think that parents need to be vigilant and community members need to be vigilant. 2022 is coming. We have three seats up for re-election on that board. We need to get the proper people in to run, and we need to elect the proper people.
I looked at what's going on in this country in general, and everybody who's listening to the show knows that prices are going up in stores. Inflation is coming. And we're going to be behind the pickle. The school board, a government agency, creates a budget, and they have to stick to it. We need conservative people on there. And because of what's going on, my wife was pressuring me. I filed to run District 1 today. So I am running for the school board in District 1, Danielle.
Amazing.
You heard it here first. I haven't told anybody.
And I have to tell you, this was a hard sell.
I also want to mention we have a person running against Susan Duvall in District 5. We have Pam Everett, who has been involved for many, many years. So I think we're on the right track. I think we got great people running. We just need to make sure they get elected.
Danielle, you're going to have to contact Pam. Maybe I'll contact Pam, have her come on and talk about her run.
Yeah.
Good. That'd be perfect. I am her campaign manager also, so I do a lot of her campaign. So anytime you need anything, you just let us know.
Danielle, I'm going to need you to help over here, too.
Well, Danielle, you know my strength is dry, and people get fuzzed over because it's in the economics of it all. Because we took – in 2014, the state was still reeling from the real estate bubble. And while people were starting to go back to work, property values were depressed. So the school district – was $12 million short in balancing a budget, and that was hard. And we did that in 2014. And by 2018, when I came off the board, we had a $14 million unrestricted reserve. And I'm proud of that. I did a lot of other things. I don't want to get into everything I did and how I did it. I built a lot of public-private partnerships that filled the gaps. You know, one of the things I really enjoyed doing was getting involved with the gentlemen's clubs, not the ones on 19, but the ones in the elementary schools where the boys wore monogram shirts and matching ties and one day a week, and it was yes, sir, no, ma'am. I followed the results in Pine Grove Elementary. And the first year that program was in effect, along with the Leading Ladies, which was a program for the girls, behavioral incidents dropped by 60%, and the GPA of that school went from a 79 to an 82. And the only way that got done was by raising private money to pay for the shirts because there was no room in the budget for it.
Hey.
We were strapped.
Hey, guys. I have a gentleman online. His name is Bill.
Yep.
He is from another district, but he's on the school board, and he wants to talk. So I'm going to welcome him in real fast. His name is Bill.
Hello, Bill.
Bill.
Hey, Paul, welcome.
Hey, how are you guys?
Hi.
Good.
So you have something you wanted to add there?
Yeah, you're on the topic of critical race theory, and I've heard people talking about EOS. And I'm wondering if you know about BOFA?
No.
Oh, it's BOFA these nuts.
Okay.
Bye.
I don't know who that is.
That was a good joke.
We just got trolled and hacked live on the air.
Right.
Have you ever heard of both?
That was crazy. On another note, Mark, on the gentleman's club,
Yes.
The Gentlemen's Club was an amazing thing, and I know that myself and Pam Everett, through the nonprofit that we had, we collected tithes and we donated them to the schools also to help out in that.
Yes, you
did. And we did that at Pine Grove, and it was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I raised $7,500 over a course of 2 years for shirts. You know, you give a young boy a clean white shirt, you know, a dress shirt, and at the end of the school year, it's nothing more than a rag, you know, because they're going to run it, they're going to play in it, you know, they're going to grow out of it. So, you know, it was a worthwhile program. And unfortunately, you know, it went away, and I'd love to bring that back.
And I'll tell you something. We raised the money. Mark and I were one of the founding people for the Educators Club in Timber Pines. Not only do we tutor in the different schools and also help out in any office capacity that they need, but mainly the tutoring, but we have
music programs.
Yeah, we have music programs and fundraisers, and that money goes right back to the school district.
Well, I'm looking at the clock, and I got a minute and a half left of live radio. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to say we had a great show. Some more Freedom of Information things have been requested. When they come in, we'll do another show about it maybe, if that's cool with you guys, and talk about it. There's going to be a town hall coming up where we're going to lay out all this stuff for you to read and see. This is very important.
And, Mark, we'll get you the details on that town hall meeting, and you can pass it along to your listeners once we get confirmation from the church.
Good job, everybody.
Thank you.
You heard it here first on Patriot Nation Radio, the official announcement of Mark Johnson, District 1. So, with that, I want to say thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And if you don't know Dave Bray, if you have never heard Dave Bray, go to DaveBrayUSA.com today. Listen to some of his music. Right now, I'm going to play a song. Everybody tell you, come back here next Thursday, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. This is the Star-Spangled Banner. And here at Patriot Nation Radio, we rise for the flag and we kneel for the cross. So right now, we are rising for the flag. This is the national anthem, the best version out to date. That's Dave Bray, folks. If you want a version of that song, head on over to DaveBrayUSA.com. You're going to miss it. Storyteller Edition is out now. New music is being posted and written, and he's on the road now playing. So check him out, DaveBrayUSA.com, for his schedule and merch. He prints everything himself. He has a printing shop at his house, and he